this is Mary J. Blige.
I'm Nicki Minaj.
What's up? This is Jay-Z.
From London, England and Washington, D.C., you are now tuned in to Conversations with Allison J., The Journey to Here, brought to you by Ethel May Books. This is Conversations with Allison J. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Conversations with Allison J., The Journey to Here. Today, as always, we have another captivating and thought-provoking topic and guest. Here's your host, Allison J.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Conversations with Allison J, The Journey to Here. I'm your host, Allison J, and today I'm pleased to welcome our guest, David Mullins. David is the founder of a company, Father Figure. Father Figure, he started in 2011 after he had grown very frustrated with the current charity he was working for when they cut their services and programs geared towards fathers. And with Father Figure, the aim and the mission is to support and maximize the role that parents play in their children's lives, especially fathers. So today, I'm pleased to have a conversation with David Mullins of Father Figure. Welcome, David.
Hey.
One of the things that I'm very interested in, and I have my own experiences, is I'm really interested in Black men. Their mental health, just everything really, because how you see Black men portrayed in the media. And I had a bit of a wake up for myself as a Black woman. Mm. This would have been probably about 3 or so years ago. I was here in the States and I was working at an event in Florida. It was a Saturday and I was seeing all these Black men with either their wives, their children, wearing wedding rings, or if they weren't with their wives and children, they were with like male friends wearing wedding rings. And I thought to myself, hold on a second. There are Black men.
Apparently these men don't exist. Apparently these men are non-existent.
And I saw more married Black men with their families than I didn't. And I thought to myself, look at that, as a Black woman, to an extent, I have also been
conditioned, and statistically, there are more Black men in their homes with children than white men. If you were to measure them up in terms of if you equaled out the numbers, mm-hmm. On a percentage basis, there's actually more Black men in their homes with their children than white men.
So with that point and with that being said, why did you start the work that you started? What is your story? What's your journey? Because for the most part, a lot of people don't, there's a reason and a cause and a drive behind why they do particular work. For example, I know somebody, she's always wanted to be a midwife from she was at school. She went to be a midwife. But there's certain things like an organization like Father, working with fathers in the home. David, what is your story? Why did you start that? Father Figure. Why did you start Father Figure?
So Father Figure, unlike most guys who are in this field, or a lot of guys in this field, didn't start because I had any real particular thing or experience. Now, I have had some experiences, but I was already on my journey when those experiences took place. I simply had got into the field of working in IT. I'd actually visited Atlanta, Georgia, and I tell you what, my trip to Atlanta, Georgia probably was the most significant, one of the more significant things that happened in my life, even though I had already had 2 children when I had come to Atlanta. So I got to Atlanta, I think I was 23 when I went to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. I became a father at the age of 18 and again at 19, 2 different women, okay? Not the plan, coming from a strong Christian household. My dad's a pastor. That wasn't the plan for me.
So hold on a second, David. So you grew up in a household where mother and father were in the household.
Yep. Okay. My parents are 50 odd years married. They are
right, and they don't have any children with anybody else other than each other.
That's right.
Because, you know, the reason that I wanted to draw on that, because that is so important, because when people say the statistics of what will happen when there's not a father in the home, so it can happen when you have grown up in the what they call the nuclear family, mommy and daddy in the home, married together, no blended families or anything, but you still ended up having two children with two different women as a teen father.
Exactly. No domestic violence, no alcohol abuse, no drug abuse, none of that. You know, great, great, great moral kind of upbringing. I think maybe to go back and touch on that, because I don't want to, I think it's important, because I know that you would probably have a lot of, potentially have a lot of people watching who are maybe Christians and you know, believers of God and follow and church goers. I think it's really important that the things you just mentioned play a part for sure. Like, you know, not growing up in a house where you've got a father, there's no doubt that that plays a part. But don't think that just because that is there, you know, the two parent family is there, that's on it, in and on its own, that is enough. Mm-hmm. The reason why I believe I ended up in that position. So my dad's story, he's a Jamaican man. He came to the UK. I didn't even know. My dad came here as a bit of a Garveyite, actually, quite political, and but ended up being, you know, becoming quite spiritual and started a church and became a pastor. And I'm number 5 of 7. So I've got a generation of sisters and brothers, you know, a bit older than me. Mm-hmm. When I'm getting to my informative years, when I say informative years, I'm starting to go into secondary school, age of 11, 12. At this stage, my older siblings are no longer at home. Right. My older brother, who's closest to me in age, started running away from home when he was 13 because he wanted to do all the things his friends were doing, and he couldn't do that. Right? You can't party in the pastor's home. Oh, sir, it can't happen. So he starts to do all of that and ends up in foster care and things like that because he's adamant. And this is the thing. And another thing, we're going on to so many different things here. You know, one size does not fit all. And we've grown up on that kind of regime, that what's good for, you know, it's all good for everyone.
Yeah.
And yes, your rules are your rules. But you have to understand that children have different temperaments, and how one child reacts to one thing may be totally different to another child. So my brother's personality was probably more of an addictive type one, and one that he was worried about his friends, and he felt that he had to be doing that. So whereas I was like, my parents used to say, party and woman are going away. So parties and girls, for those who don't understand that West Indian bit of colloquialism, are not going anywhere. When you get to a certain age, they'll still be there.
Right.
I kind of thought about that, and I thought, you know what, they're right. I'll just bide my time. My friends, I was cool. I was the kid that could go and say, I'm not allowed to go. Yeah, you know, even though some of your friends are all going, I'm not allowed. I'm going to church on Sunday. And to be fair, I'd come back to school on Monday and someone had been stabbed or something. And I'm like, well, I was in Sunday school. I weren't going to get stabbed in Sunday school. So I was cool. I was able to kind of have that kind of attitude. So we go on from that. Back to why I feel that it's important for us to understand my journey, even though I had this great upbringing, moral upbringing, is my dad was out of touch with my reality.
Right.
All right. I'm a 70s born child. I'm growing up in the world, going to secondary school in the 80s, 90s. Let's say 89, I started secondary school, early 90s. My dad doesn't know what's going on in my... Things are changing. Mobile phones are starting to come out. They weren't out while I was at school, but they started to come out. But just to show you, technology is moving now.
Yeah.
Things are changing. We had pagers. You know, I had a pager and stuff like that. I was able to get a little pager, right? So things are changing rapidly. My dad's already brought up a generation of children where things were quite different. My dad's a Jamaican-born man in England. Mm. He's not totally versed with the culture here. He's learning it himself with my older siblings. Mm-hmm. But this stuff is changing for me. So my dad does not know what is going on when I leave my front door to go to school. He doesn't know. He's not in touch. He was not in touch with that. My dad is not also talking to me about girls and sex.
Mm.
And this is another thing that parents of a certain culture, generation, or Christians are not talking to children about, it because it's just abstinence. No, you do that when you get married. You don't. So there's no conversation. I could have been a dad at 15. I probably would have been 15, 16. My girlfriend had a miscarriage. She miscarried the child at, 3 months. So our parents then had to be informed. Like, I had to tell my dad, like, what was going on. My dad still never talked to me about sex or contraception. And so, you know, this is what I want to make clear, that yes, I came from a great house, and I don't regret it, and I'm really thankful for it, because to be honest, I could be quite easily in prison or dead right now, easily, but for the upbringing I had. But at the same time, there were some gaps. There were some gaps in that, and I just think that's really important to speak about. So why did I start? So I had a background of IT, came to Atlanta, Georgia, came back inspired by seeing all these black people in all positions,
yeah,
something I'd never seen in the UK.
Absolutely,
I'm like, what the hell am I doing? Like, I was a postman. I was delivering mail as a driver for Royal Mail, and I had to do that because I had to support my children. I didn't really get to pursue education in a way that I would have wanted to. I wanted to be an accountant, but you know, thank God for that. What a boring job. Sorry for any accountants watching. Just not for me. Not you know, I liked the idea of making money, which I thought would make me, it would be a good choice of career, but no, definitely not for me. Thank God for Jesus, that wasn't the way I went. I came back from Atlanta saying I can't do this anymore, and I never went back to work. I took some time off sick, called in sick, went in on my birthday. So I went to Atlanta. I think it was October 2000, the 13th of October. Came back 14 days later, rang in sick, went back into work on the 28th of December, which is my birthday, and said to my what we called our governor, I said, thank you, but no thanks. I think I'm better than this job. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way to anyone here or you, but I think that I can do better than doing what I do here. I don't think I can stay here and improve myself. I think I have to just go. So that I'm under that type of pressure. I had worked out that I could survive for 2 years if I never made a penny, because of I had, that's a whole nother story. But I had some money that I had acquired and saved.
Yes.
And it meant that I could survive for 2 years.
The alter ego had acquired some money.
That's right. So I got into Cisco Systems, qualified as a Cisco certified Cisco networking engineer. By the time I got that qualification, the field was totally saturated. And so I couldn't get a job because there were guys who had the experience and the qualifications and didn't have jobs. Then I went into software and hardware, and I opened a shop with a friend. And, the economy moved a lot. We spend a lot on just overhead. So I'm like, I want to do something different. I feel like I've got something to give back. Didn't necessarily know what. I wasn't rich, that's for sure. But I felt... coming from where I'd come from, I had a lot of friends who had fallen foul of the law. They were in prison. They were maybe committed some serious crimes, and some had even died. And so I was just saying, I felt like, I'd escaped that. I'd navigated away from that, and I had something to give. Got involved with an organization who were doing a load of different things for black boys and men, and ended up working with a charity, and this charity were doing what they called in the UK, we called Sure Start Centres, which were set up to support what they call early years, birth to 5 years old. So it would essentially, if you went to a Sure Start Centre, they would have all the services that you would require for a family or a child birth to five, all under one roof. What was happening in these centres is that notoriously they were populated by females, basically the staff and the people who would use the service. You wouldn't see dads coming in there, you'd just see mums and children. And all the research was pointing to the fact that fathers were quite important. And I was in a really informal interview, offered, it wasn't actually an interview, it was a conversation. I was offered the opportunity to work on said project. And I was like, I don't know what that is. I don't know that that's for me. Mm-hmm. And I was asked about my experience. And then I thought, okay, I became a dad twice within 9 months with two different women. And I've spoken to a lot of guys about my experience and just giving advice informally. So I thought, yeah, okay, maybe. Started working for this organization, this charity. austerity measures came in, all these cuts, and one of the first things that went was the Project for Fathers. So I was like, mentally, I was like, this didn't sit well with me. Firstly, for the first time in my life, probably since the age of 14, this was going to be the first time that I didn't know where my next bit of money was going to come from. And I was like, that didn't sit well with me. But secondly, it was that I knew that this project was important. In the area of London that I was in, I knew that this was important work. And it just didn't make sense because, after all, children have two parents. And I know that the word parents really points to mothers. It doesn't point to mother and father. And so services that are out there was very much pointing towards mothers. So I then decided that I was going to do something myself. I didn't know what it was going to be, in all honesty. I did a launch event on Father's Day 2011, so 9 years ago on Sunday, just gone. Here we are. Like 9 years later, father figure's here. Now, what I would add to that is that I think I was meant to do this. There were some things that would happen to me within my own life that make me believe I was supposed to do this work. So I became a single, I say a single father, I was in a relationship, but it mentally I was a single father. I became a single father for a period of time when I had to take my two of my children, my oldest and my youngest, who have the same mother, at the age of, I think, 3 and 10. I had to take them out of their mother's care and keep them in my care. She would go on to lose her freedom. Anyway, for 7 years and serve a 3.5 year sentence. So, and I wanted my children before that, actually. And here's another thing I do say to people, careful what you pray for.
Yeah.
Because you may get what you want, but you may not get it the way you wanted it. I prayed for my children to be able to come and live with me. And my prayers were answered in less than 2 weeks. Little did I know it would be as a result of you know, their mother being incarcerated. But that's how that is what had actually happened for me. So for me, my story isn't that, oh my God, I was denied access to my children or something really happened to me. I think just this was the path God had for me, and essentially I'm just doing what I've been instructed to do, in all honesty. But it has played been very important in my life. And when I really reflect, if I wasn't doing the work I did, there goes me involved with social services easily. You know, there goes me not being a very good, potentially a good father to my children because you know, I maybe just be looking at stereotypes of what a father should be and just living by that. But yeah, that's how I got into the father figure. Sorry to keep it so long. I'm hoping that I did cover a few things within that explanation.
No. Because the thing is, I just wanted to hear the journey. And so many things have come out of that were interesting, because there's so many times, like you said, that if it wasn't for that, you would have bought into the stereotype. And it's amazing that the stereotypes are there. And we buy into them without even realizing that we have bought into them. Like I was saying through my experience, when I was seeing all of these fathers walking through, and I'm thinking, hold on a second. And I was thinking to myself, if I can buy into it, then...
Exactly. You loved yourself and loved your people.
Right. If I can buy into it, and like you were saying, you're unapologetically Black. Likewise, I am unapologetically Black. I don't try to, because you know some people say, well, I'm mixed with, no, I am Black. And if I can buy into the stereotype, then in some respects, I think other ethnicities can be forgiven for buying
exactly. into the stereotypes
as well.
100%. We really have to, you know, think about how we educate them. And how we you know, do that in a way that is nice and essential. Because as I said, you don't know a privilege until you've lost it. And they don't actually understand. Why would they? They're brought up in a world where they are, the standard is what they are.
Exactly.
It's what they see. That's the standard. And anything that falls outside of that is just questionable. It's just questionable. At very least, it's questionable. Like, what is that? That's not normal. Over here, on Father's Day, the Conservative Party posted a picture with a black man and his black child. If you see the backlash for that, it is ridiculous. The racism, the, oh my God, at least it's not a Muslim. Well, I didn't even know black kids had dads. And blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know, it's the ignorance that you're dealing with. But it goes to the fact that, as you said, there's a picture painted that black men are not in the lives of their children. And it's just, it's not true. It's not true. I've worked with fathers for 14 years in total. And I've worked with all races, all cultures. And I think that there are some things that are unique to different cultures. And being absent isn't one that I would necessarily, I think what I would attribute to black fathers is something that they need to work on. We talk about black fathers is how they remain actively present in their children's life after the breakup of a relationship. After the breakup of a relationship, how they remain active within the life of that child. What I would say is that it's too easy for them to decide that they're gonna not play that role as much as they could. And it's not that they're not playing the role at all. It's just that they're maybe not doing enough. But that is something I would talk about for black fathers, but it isn't that they don't care and they're not there. Mm. You know, we can go to the Asian community and see some of these things are prevalent. Some things that are more prevalent, for example, in some cultures is domestic violence. Mm. The default position is domestic violence. It's just normal. The way that a woman is treated and what is expected of her, it's abusive. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so there are pros and cons, whatever culture you want to go to. What I do notice is that with white people, white culture, we don't pin anything to, you know, when a white man murders a white man, we don't call it white on white crime. Mm-hmm. It's just a murder.
Yeah.
It's just a murder. When, you know, when he leaves his woman, he's not, it, we don't pin it on the whole culture. Oh, white men leave their mother, the mothers,
and their deadbeat dads, and their absent
fathers. Yeah.
And, you know, to your point of like black men, sometimes they may not try as hard once a relationship has broken down. But the thing is, why do you think that is though? Because when you like, for example, if I was to look at some of the guys I know, for example, yes. And you've got situations where the mother has made it ridiculously difficult for the father to have access to their child, or the it's a case of, I have known in situations where men have said, you know something, I can't deal with this anymore. But when my child is older, my child will come and look for me. I mean, what would you say to situations like that? Would you tell them, look, go through the courts? What would you tell them to do?
So firstly, I wouldn't say it's not that they don't try as hard. I'd say that they could be put off easier. They could be less persistent. They could maybe be less persistent than they could be.
Right.
I think there's a number of reasons for that. I think that sometimes it's a lack of understanding of what is involved in that process. Like, how can I do this? Like, if she's doing this, I don't like to say all men or all anyone, right? But my experience as a man, having been a man all my life and intend to be for the rest of my life, and having worked with men for 14 years, I think that as men, we like to fix things.
Mm.
Like to be able to fix a problem. And when you realize as a man that you haven't got any control, it can be quite demasculating. You are just like, oh, I can't, actually my energy, my desire, my shouting, or my passion, or my love, it doesn't necessarily fix it. And it's like, well, where do you go? Some men resort to violence in a situation like that. Some men resort to harassment or abuse, and then these don't work. And it's like, and so the last thing that often is being considered is actually the court process, which can be followed. But hey, you might decide you're going to follow that, and you're not aware that someone like me exists who can help you through that process. at a much smaller price is that you'd have to pay a solicitor. So now it's like, well, I've got no money. In the UK, there's no legal aid. You don't get legal aid for any cases like this, whereas you used to. If you wasn't working, if you was unemployed, you could get legal aid to help navigate you through this process. That isn't there anymore. That was one of the drivers to me starting this process, because I was seeing that a lot of men were walking away from these situations because they just didn't have the money. That's, you know, solicitors are costing thousands of pounds. Mm. And so they would just, they'd walk away. So that was one of the real big drivers to me getting involved. So yeah, that lack of powerlessness, just feeling powerless, that is one of the major things. In terms of the guys who turn around and say, "I'll wait," I've heard that a lot of times. Mm-hmm. Heard it a lot of times. And then what I do say to men in that situation is, listen, I'm sitting here in my house, in my office. In there, my children are there, and the ones that are not are older, and I've never been denied access to my children, so mm-hmm. I will fully never understand that feeling. Mm-hmm. But what I would say is that it's not for me to convince you, okay? Not for me to convince you that you should be a father to your child. Mm-hmm. The child that you were talking about of connecting with when they get to that age will not be a child.
Mm.
They will not be your child. They will be your child by design and by DNA, but actually they'll have nothing apart from the things that they have acquired through DNA.
Mm-hmm.
They will have nothing that you have been able to pass on, or your family's been able to pass right. on. So you saying you're going to reconnect at 18, it might not be the experience you would want it or expect it to be. And actually, you're going to miss out on a whole load. You don't need to do that. There is a process. You can follow that process. I've got a 100% success rate with the men that I've been to court with in helping them to reestablish contact with children. I can help you. Your biggest enemy is time and maybe money. But it could be a hell of a lot worse when we talk about the money side of it, because you could be dealing with a solicitor, in which case you'd be spending a hell of a lot more money. But your biggest enemy is going to be time. And so it's your decision. If you can live with that fact that you're going to leave this child to grow up and allow other people to influence mm-hmm. the adult that they will be, that is your decision. I know it's one that I wouldn't make, but I'm not sitting here going to try to persuade you any more than that, because I know I wouldn't make that decision, and I know what I want to do with my children. So that is the conversation I would have with any man who says that to me.
So to your point then, because to be honest, until very recently, I didn't know organizations like yours existed. So could it just very well be that they don't know where to go? So they, because I remember, gosh, I'm trying to remember when this was. I think it was back in 2001. I was in a relationship, and that's when I'm trying to remember the name of the form, because it was something like any child that was born into a situation where the parents were not married, the father had no legal rights, and he had to sign a
right.
parental agreement form.
Parental responsibility.
Responsibility form. So yeah. you see yeah. what I mean? And obviously me being somebody that, and you know, at that time I didn't have any children, I didn't understand, and I didn't know.
Yeah.
I tried to do as much research as I could to help to find, but it could just be if he had known that an organization like yours existed,
yeah.
then it's so. I think there's so many other people that could have been helped. So, you know, to your point, you say that you have 100% success rate. How do you get the word out there, David? Because if I know several men who have said that, and literally because of, and I'm not here to bash any women, because as you know, to no. echo what you said, I've always been a woman and I plan on always being a woman. So I'm not in the past any women. However, yeah. I do know, and I have seen like in instances where men have tried to see their children and it's been made difficult. Like there's one example where he would get his daughter every Friday, have her all through the weekend. And one particular week, the mother would call. I used to all come in to get her Friday. And he's like, yeah, every day. And he's thinking, this is a bit weird. Why is she calling me every single day? Goes to the house to pick up the daughter. Knocking, knocking, nothing. When he's, you know, trying to look through the windows, noticed that the woman had moved, cleaned that entire place out and didn't tell him. But it was almost like I don't know what satisfaction she got from doing that. And then another instance where, again, man trying to see his child, it being made very difficult, all kind of obstacles, barriers put in the way, to the point where he gets a phone call one day and he says, it's not because I want you to speak to her, it's because I'm tired of her crying herself to sleep at night asking for her dad. So there are situations and instances when you hear things like that and you think, why would you do that to your child? But then not knowing that an organization like yours exists, and he's thinking, I don't have the money to go through court, I don't know which way to turn. So in some cases, they just literally throw their hands up in the air.
Exactly.
Like, what am I supposed to do?
I think the difficulty is my business card is one that no man really wants to keep in his pocket. Do you understand what I'm saying? Would you want my business card for? You're not going to never need it. You hope you'll never need to call me. Mm. So that is part of the problem. This thing is like, you don't realize, you don't even understand what is going on until it happens, unless you have a friend. And even then, right, you're kind of, as a man, you might even hear a brethren going through it or a friend, and you don't really embrace yourself in it. Because you almost, I liken it to my friend's son being murdered some years ago, a few years back, 15-year-old boy, going home from school, doing exactly what he should have been doing, when he should have been doing it, and he got stabbed and got murdered. And it's like, I couldn't even allow myself to be my friend. I could not allow myself to be this man, that boy's father.
Because
I didn't want what comes with that to go through me. I couldn't deal with it. I could just be there for him as a friend, but I could not, to this day, I've not immersed myself in that feeling. And I think maybe some of it is that we, yes, guys, you see guys who've been through it but you don't really understand it. So you see the man go through it and then it comes to your door and you're like, oh, that's what it is. This is what it is. This is what it feels like. And then you forget. You don't even remember. Like I said, no one wants, you don't want my business card. I saw a guy at shopping, must have been around Christmas time. I've not seen this guy since I left school. So we're talking over 25, 28 years, I don't know, something like that. I've not seen him for that period. And seen him just the other day. Oh, how are you doing? Like, yeah, long time, blah, blah, blah. Called me 2 days ago. I'm sleeping in my car. My blah, 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 blah. And it's only because I said, oh, this is, you know, he's like, oh, what do you do now? And I'm like, oh, I do this. He's like, okay. He's called me out of the blue.
Wow.
You know, so I think a lot of the time it's, you know, my work, it's word of mouth. I do put stuff out on social media. But as I said, nobody wants my business card. Nobody needs it until they need it. You don't need it until you need it. And it's like,
But the thing is, there's so many men having already gone through this that you would think to yourself, or that are still going through it, that you would think unfortunately, the majority of us know somebody that has either been through it or is going through it. So the fact that we're not like, you know something, call David, call father figure, because this is the work that they do. And that's what I don't fathom and don't understand, why as a community, and it's not, and I'm sure it's not just black men that you work with as fathers, you work with just fathers across the board. So as people, I don't understand why in the year of 2020, when there's all these statistics about single parent households, why we're still not talking about the fact that there are organizations like Father Figure that can help, not necessarily bring those households back together, but help in the whole, what is this term, co-parenting.
Yeah. I think it's work in progress. I do get calls regularly. I could get a load more. You're right. And actually, I have helped mothers as well, because I'm all about the child. Obviously, my work focuses on fathers because I know it's a niche market. I have a as Liam Neeson would say, not sure if he's the greatest guy to quote, because I know he said some things that are not too nice. But I have I have a set of skills.
The character, yes, the character in Taken.
So, which means that I can engage with men in a way that I feel that a lot of organisations and public sector organisations that are supposed to support fathers don't. But I, you know, for me, I'm about the child. Mm. And actually, I will support any case. I will support any case where I believe that what I'm doing is helping the best outcome for the child. So I have actually been with some mothers, just to put that out there. But yes, I think that, you know, there's another thing, Alison, where I think sometimes men talk about this stuff and they're not really about it. So sometimes I've had calls from girlfriends, new girlfriends, mums, sisters, and I used to entertain those conversations. I no longer do. I give a free consultation. And if a mum calls me, I explain that it's really important that your son calls me. Because what that tells me is that he is ready to take on this journey. Yeah, sometimes it's mum who's grandchild and, no, you have to see your child. Mm. And actually, your son's not actually up to it. Your son's not ready. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to draw upon my spirit of discernment. I have to draw upon my professional development. And just my general kind of senses that make me pick sense from nonsense based on what you are saying to me. Mm-hmm. That's part of my job, because there are a lot of abusive men who will use this same process to get back at women as well.
That's interesting. Talk about that.
Well, I think that there will be men who will be using that as a part of control, that actually they don't really care about the child, or they do care about the child, but actually the main focus is winning or getting back at the mum. So I have to be able to, you know, within myself, do as much as I can to be comfortable that I'm actually doing what is right here. And often I can't always know that until we get to court and I hear what the other side says as to why contact is being denied. Or if I see a police report. Mm-hmm. And a police report doesn't always tell you everything. Yeah. Because we know that people, be they male or female, have maliciously called the police. Mm-hmm. How don't I know that as a black man? That has happened. But that doesn't just say, oh, the police have been called. But I had a guy the other day, for instance, and you know, he's like, no, I've got to see my daughter now, my son now, blah, blah, blah. But it's enough, it's enough. Question I asked is, have the police been called, ever been called? Yeah, she all the time she calls the police, all the time. I'm like, okay, how much times? Enough times. How much times? Over five? Yes. I'm like, okay. So I'm saying, well, you do know this is potentially a problem for you. Why? All of them were NFA. No further action. So, okay. And this is the thing, like, you've got guys who think the criminal court and the family court are two different things. The, you know, criminal court, the burden is on evidence and proof. The family court is actually, it's more about probability. And so now I'm saying to the guy, so he's trying to say to me, but why? What do you mean? So I'm saying, well, okay, if I go to pick up my child from the mother and she calls the police on me, I might put myself in that situation again, because it might just think like, okay, there's a bit of a misunderstanding here. Mm-hmm. She thought I was, but actually I wasn't.
Yeah.
But she does it a second time, a third and a fourth.
Yeah.
Who's the idiot? Who's the person here who's not quite right? Because I said, why would you put yourself in that situation where someone gets to call the police on you so many times?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you get someone else to go for you, or someone to come with you? Wouldn't you film so that if the police are called, you can say, here you are, look, here you go. This is what happened. I knocked the door, I've waited outside the gate, and I've just waited for my daughter to come. So these are the kind of things that kind of get me to kind of get inside the head of my prospective client.
Okay.
If I personally think that there's been abuse, and look, I think you and I were sitting on a panel together when we first met, and the saying I said is that I coined is that all men within intimate relationships have been abusive to their partners in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that might just be verbal. It might be mental. It might be. And I don't mean that it's necessarily it has been malicious. And I could also say that all men have probably received some kind of abusive behavior too. And I think it's important to say that, because I think it's important for people to understand what constitutes abuse. And it basically is power and control.
Mm-hmm.
If you are controlled, if you are trying to use power or control to get someone else to do something, then it's abuse.
Yeah.
And as I said on that show, sulking is a form of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if there's no aggressive behavior. There's no shouting, there's no swearing, there's no hitting, but there's an invisible line of basic silence.
Yeah.
And that can get me my rice and peas and oxtail that I want on Sunday. Because the last time you didn't make me that, I didn't talk to you for like 48 hours. So do you know what? I don't want that in the house. It's not a nice mood. I'm going to make him his rice and peas and oxtail on Sunday.
Yeah, because you just want to do what you want to do to keep the peace. Because I remember with my ex-husband, when he would do that to me, I remember we would have a disagreement, because I'm not really an arguing type of person. I learned many years ago that arguments solve nothing. So I would rather we have a conversation where everybody's calmed down. And we can then listen to each other. And he would just do the silent treatment. And I remember it could go on for days.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm there trying to, in my head, you could see the hamster wheel going. I'm trying to rack my brain.
How do you get him back? Or what did I do?
And not only that, because all I wanted was to bring peace back into the home so that it can change the environment to being back to a peaceful environment. And then it ultimately, so what's wrong? What do you need? And it was all about him and what he needed. And I'm not saying that I'm without fault here, because you see, the thing is, different personalities. I'm that person that I will blow up one time. We have a conversation. It's done. I'm not into taking it on for days and days and days and days.
Yeah.
That is too much like hard work for me. And mentally, it's exhausting. So I'm not saying that I was like perfect in the marriage or anything like that. I didn't contribute to the breakdown of it. But I remember there was that one thing. And it wasn't until recently and being on the panel with you when you said that, I'm like, you know what? Yeah, that was actually a form of abuse. And like you're saying, not necessarily malicious abuse. But it is a form of control and manipulation.
Exactly. And then it can escalate into other things. Because what happens if you don't get on your hamster wheel and start to sort and find these resolutions? What happens if you do the same? What if you both kind of, then what? Does the behavior change? Does it get ramped up? You know, because what we do know, you know, like when you hear a woman talking about it, he's never done it before. And maybe it is the first time he's hit you. But what I can guarantee you is that there's been abuse. There's been some other abuse. Violence is like the last stage of abuse.
Mm.
Before that is your sulking, there's your cursing, your name calling, maybe a push, you know, maybe hitting something, banging on something, smashing something. Then
they're putting you down in a conversation, but exactly. I was only joking.
Right. And then it escalates. So it's important that we have those conversations, that we know what these things are and we can identify them. I think it's important that we talk about it with men and women, because there's a distinct lack of awareness of what it is. And women are putting up with it from relationship to relationship because they think that that's just how men are.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what men do. Mm. And men are just doing it because they think that it's all right. You know, it's all right. That's what we do. Yeah, that's what we do. I had someone on my phone yesterday. There's so much time, just every conversation, you just hear little things. And look, the gentleman had a real legitimate complaint about his wife and what he was saying to me. You know, just talking about her working. She worked nights, but she then does extra shifts. And in the current climate, he's at home. He's working from home. He's doing all the work with the children. Mm. And then she comes home and she complains. And he said, so what? Am I the woman now? And it's like, well, what do you mean? Are you the woman? Like, you do. And one of the things I say to men is like, well, look, the jobs responsibilities and things that are done within a household are defined within your relationship. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when I've worked with men who have used abusive behavior, I the first thing I ask them is rip up your blueprint of what you think a man is and what a man's role is. Rip it up, because it's not defined by anything other than the house that you live in.
Mm-hmm.
So if you live alone, then you've got to do everything. You got to cook, you got to clean, you've got to do everything. What are you, a woman, when you're doing that? So when a woman comes in that house, does it mean you just, okay, I don't have to do this anymore?
Yeah, here you go. That's your job.
Yeah. It's defined. And what if you've got a powerful woman who actually works long hours and comes home at 8 o'clock, but she's the one who's really, you know, and even if she's not bringing home the most crust, that's what she does. She works the longer hours. Well, who takes care of dinner? Do we wait for her to get home?
I'm home, right?
Even though you've been there since 6 and she gets home at 8. It's what is defined within your relationship.
Mm.
That's as simple as that. The only thing I agree that men should do is the heavy lifting stuff.
Yeah.
Because we are physically stronger than women, right? Mm. But outside of that, everything else is up for negotiation. Why not?
Mm.
Why not? What you know, it's defined. You may be a stereotypical woman who wants to cook and clean and do all of that. And that's fine if that's what you want to do.
I'll do the cooking. The cleaning, but I don't know about that.
So there you go. So I've got to make a decision whether or not that's something I want to work with. And it's not about me being abusive. It's about me saying, well, actually, I want a woman that cleans and cooks, and I'm going to have to find one who does. Not for me to abuse you and downtrodden you to make you cook and clean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just doesn't work like that. You can have your choices. Good luck on finding that. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's up to you. I'm not going to tell you can't have that if that's what you want, but you better find someone who wants to do it. Don't try to make someone do it, because now when you're going to have a problem.
Yeah, that's true, because I remember before getting married, it's like he would come round, like, oh my gosh, your house is spotless, and I'm always cooking and whatever. Now, don't get me wrong, I love to cook. I will cook all day, every day, and I don't like, I one of my things is I hate cleaning the bathroom, but guess what? Living alone, I'm not going to live in a pigsty, and I'm not going to live dirty. My mother didn't raise me that way, so I'm going to clean the bathroom. And I must admit that when we got married, that was then his thing. I did everything else. And that was his, and I must admit, he had no problem with doing it, because it wasn't a case of he decided that, oh, okay, well, you're the woman, you know how to keep a house, so you do that. So, and that's one thing, as you know, to your point, gone are the days when roles within the house were defined by gender.
No, it doesn't happen anymore. It just doesn't work like that.
Mm.
You know, we're all working loads of hours and blah, blah, blah. And look, if you're a kept woman, there still has to be a conversation, right?
Yeah.
You know, there still has to be a conversation. It's like, okay, you know, I go work and you don't work and I pay all the bills. But it still has this. I still can't come home and just say, but it's like, we have to have that conversation.
Yeah.
All right, babes, if I work all day, I think it's reasonable that maybe you do this, blah, blah, blah. And then she might tell me, say, yeah, I'll do this, but I really can't do that. I don't like it. And then again, it's a conversation, right? It's not just an assumption that that's what you do. And I think we have to, because I think we unconsciously train these things into our children as well. So as I said, there are women who accept that this is their role and this is what they should do. And there's men who have that expectation of this is what women do.
Mm.
And it's about having these conversations where you say, well, actually, it's all right that, you know, I remember when I started to, you know, for me, I would not class myself as a chauvinist at all. However, when I started doing my domestic violence work, I remember after I married my wife, it became apparent that my wife didn't like to wash dishes. I never knew that before. We were together for like 4 or 5 years before we got married. And then all of a sudden, she doesn't like to wash dishes. And I was like, so when did this happen? And then I had flashbacks of this guy, an unmarried man telling me, yeah, you're getting married. Wait till you get married. It's all going to change. So I had that voice. I heard him saying that in my head. And I remember having this kind of disdain that she didn't want to wash the dishes. Not that she didn't wash the dishes, because I didn't have a problem with that. My wife cooks. She does do all the cooking mainly. And she does all those things. So I didn't have a problem that I was washing them up, or even the children.
Mm.
It was just like, it was almost like, how dare she not like to work, like, and I was, in my mind, even though I had, it's crazy because it wasn't that I had an expectation for her to do it. It was just this thing that, what, how come she doesn't, what do you mean she don't like it?
And I really women are supposed to like to cook and clean.
Exactly. So I had to check myself and I was like, what the hell am I even saying here? Like, this doesn't even make sense because I didn't, even though I wasn't expecting her to do it, I had an expectation that, why would she not like to do it? Do you know what I mean? And I had to really check myself, like, wow. But we are influenced by so many different things.
Mm.
So many things around us are telling us these things. And so I don't, again, you know, I think in my work, it's really important that as much as people have heard me say things that they may perceive to be really judgmental, I don't judge. I'm not judging you. I'm not saying, oh my God, what's wrong with you? Because then I wouldn't be able to work with you in a way that can help you change. I'm empathetic to men in their behaviors, whatever they are. And I wasn't always at that place. I was at a place where I really just had a disdain for men who were abusive towards women. And it's not that I don't have a disdain for that, but I can't allow that disdain to not let me get you in the room and help you change your behavior. Mm-hmm. I had to change my attitude. I've got to come from a place of, well, this man's doing this for a reason. He's learnt this somewhere. And I have to try and untrain him. Mm-hmm. I have to train him to do something else. Otherwise, I can't be in a space to affect change. That man's just going to go and pick up someone else. Yeah. He's just going to go and do it to someone else if we don't try to support and help him. So I'm certainly not in a place of judgment of any man or woman who are using behaviors that are less than, you know, desirable and not you know, not conducive to positive relationships or the upbringing of children. But yeah, it's just, I feel like that specifically is a really important bit of work that we can't just chuck these men onto the heap. Yeah, someone, because they'll do it again or they'll bring up children who will do it.
Yeah, and that's such a key point, you know. It is a lot of it and a lot of how we live is actually learned behavior that doesn't actually serve us. It doesn't serve our relationship. It doesn't actually really serve anything. And it's that unlearning, but it's knowing and realizing that, hold on a second, I need to do something because this behavior, this learned behavior, that, and to be honest, some of it is through no fault of anybody's really, because things are handed down from generation to generation that maybe it may have suited a particular generation, but the generations that come, it doesn't work. And so that, like when you were saying about your dad, it's not a one size fits all from generation to generation. It just can't work that way. So it's kind of interesting that you should say that. So what's next for father figure?
Oh man, if I'm honest with you, I want to develop some training for other men.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time, I've battled with how do I get guys, because I've just looked at myself and I'm like, my experience is very unique and I can't train anybody to be who I am. And I guess I've come to the realization that's not what the job is not to train anyone to be who I am, because I'm unique and you just can't, you know, some of my experiences coupled with my professional development, it just can't be replicated.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be. So I am thinking about creating training so that I can get men on this path and give them some kind of level. I've got some other stuff happening, which is it's happening right now. And it speaks to what is happening in the world right now.
Okay.
When will this go out, Alison?
I'm not sure yet. When do you want it? Why?
It doesn't overly matter, but it's because of I'm developing something which will go out in the public domain probably within the next 2 weeks, which speaks to what is going on today. And it actually isn't about fathers, it's about black people. Mm-hmm. It's about black people in institutions, in all institutions, whether they're public, private, charity, and how we maybe can get these organizations to address some of the issues that we are facing as black people. Because I don't know if it was part of the recording, but at the beginning we were talking about you know, what's going on across the world and how there are organizations, institutes now who are holding their hands up saying, okay, we've been getting this wrong. We can see that actually there is an issue here systemically for black people. And so I've come up with a concept that will help organizations to address the systemic and institutional hurdles that Black people have faced. And it is specifically about Black people.
Mm-hmm.
So what I can tell you is that it is something called Institutionally Black Aware, IBA. And we will be looking at getting institutions, organizations to implement a framework that will be favorable to Black people and which will support Black people to thrive in organizations and not to have this experience of these, as I said earlier on, moving glass ceilings, because right. They are moving.
Mm-hmm.
We get to them and then we don't get through them, or one person gets through and then you never see them again, or you just, they don't seem to be sympathetic or empathetic or even mm-hmm. have the power to be empathetic to anyone else. Or you know, maybe be a bit like Barack Obama, who, yes, he inspired many, but actually he's hardly Trump-esque. Trump is looking after his own. You've got to give him credit. Mm-hmm. That guy looks after his own.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Barack just didn't, for me, he just didn't do that. He didn't look mm-hmm. after his own. He probably kind of felt, well, I've got to be diplomatic here and, you know, do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't look after his own. And actually, we're saying that, you know, historically, what has been done to us, you need to put some measures in place for us. So, yeah, that's something that I'm working on really right now. For father figure, it is about trying to expand. It is about trying to, as I said, train up other guys, get them on this journey.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, be able to have it even wider. We have started something called Men Talking, the acronym being Men, Mental, Talking and King.
Oh.
And Men Talking is a Zoom conversation that takes place on a Wednesday evening. We've had the brothers from America on as well. But all over the UK, guys on, you know, from Manchester, Birmingham, Derby, London, Nottingham. We've had guys all over the country who come on. We speak, we have conversations on different matters.
And
mm-hmm. That's been happening for it was born out of COVID, in all honesty. And so for the duration of COVID that has happened, we've only had 1 week where we haven't had a session, where we haven't had a talk, and that was last week, because just things were just too hectic. Mm-hmm. But maybe to expand the Men Talking so that there were conversations happening all over the world in different places. You know, other people leading on the conversations. I can't lead on every conversation, but other people to take up the baton of Men Talking and just have conversations. Men Talking has overwhelmingly had only Black men on. And what I would say is that it wasn't set up to be just for Black men. I was actually going to have a specific conversation called Black Men Talking
mm-hmm.
and then Men Talking. But it's only been Black men that have come on. And actually what I have now decided is that I don't think I need to do anything. As a Black man growing up in the UK, I've grown up in spaces that were white all my life
mm-hmm.
and I've had to make do with it. I've got on trains and buses where I've been the only Black man. I've worked in places, I've gone in rooms where I've been the only Black man. So if a white man comes on and he doesn't feel comfortable, then you keep cracking on, sir, and do what suits you. But if you want to stay in the room, you stay in the room.
Stay in the room. Because we're not throwing you out. Stay in the room.
Stay in the room. I've stayed in the room all my life. I've driven cars, worn clothes, for things that I've never seen advertised by anyone who looks like me.
Right.
So it is what it is. So yeah, that's one of the things that I think we'll be expanding. We'll have different people from different walks of life come on there. We may even have you come on there. In fact, I would like
you know what? Whenever you're ready, I'd be more than happy to.
Yes, honestly. I would like you to come on there and speak about your experience, because I think absolutely. It's really powerful and important.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's it really at the moment.
That's great. That is great. So, David, tell everybody where they can find you and where they can find Father Figure.
So, the easiest way to get in contact with Father Figure is via our website, which is all the W's, fatherfigure.org.uk. You can fill in a contact form, and if you want to be in contact, we'll get back in contact with you. Or you can, if it's a consultation you want, then we'll do a free consultation for you. On social media, look, I'm going to reach for my card because I'm getting to an age now where I just don't remember these things. So here's my card. So on Facebook, I know that we're Father Figure, one word, four children, second word.
Is it the word four or the number four?
The word for.
Okay.
F-O-R, yeah? Right. Father Figure, four children. And then on Instagram, it's father_figure4.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, four children. And that's on Instagram. And Twitter, I think it's F_figure. But yeah, I don't, you know, come to the website. We'll work it out from there.
Yeah, you can be directed. So it's fatherfigure.org.uk.
That's correct.
Excellent. So we can, because I'm just hoping that after this, David, that you will be inundated. You'll have to move to bigger premises, take on a bigger team, because mm-hmm. this is such vital work that's needed. And like you said, it's not just for Black men, it's for men, fathers, and you help women.
Of course. Of course. Our priority is the child. That's right. Our priority.
As it should be, the child is the priority, the good of the child. David, thank you. This has been great. And we definitely are going to catch up after this.
For sure. All right. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you for being a guest, David. Look after yourself. Thank you. Speak soon.
All right.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you for spending time with us. We're already looking forward to the next episode of This is Conversations with Allison J. The journey to here. Until next time, honor, respect, and blessings to you all. If you want to connect, visit AllisonJ.net. That's AllisonJaye.net. Allison with one L, as she is the one and only.